Attendance to let us know if there's a quorum, Nicole.
Good morning.
Today's Friday, May 20th. If I call your name, please let me know if you're here. Ian Thomas.
Here.
Shelley Maloney.
Here.
Ivan Perone.
Here.
Dane Sheldon.
Here.
Mr. Ray Monteleone.
Here.
And then we have PFM here as well.
Laura Howe and Mara Lugo from PFM Financial Advisors.
And of course, we have Stephen Alexander on WebEx.
Hello, Stephen.
Good morning, Scott Sweet. Hello, good morning.
Ivan, on his next contract, we take $50 away every meeting that in person, I told him. Perfect.
I think you should do 100. It's inflation.
Even better. Okay. I assume we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
So as such, we will convene the meeting. So my first order of business is to welcome everyone and entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting. I make a motion.
I'll second.
Discussion? Being none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. We are now our investment advisors from PFM Asset Management. And this is the part where they tell us what we own, how we're doing, what we should do. The second part of PFM's report is to tell us what we need to do, like a treasurer's function, in obtaining capital, maintaining capital, etc. And with that, I will turn it over to our investment advisor, who will be speaking.
All right, good morning. Scott Sweet is going to lead us off today in the market update. So I'll get the pages here for you.
So we can go to page 4, Steve.
This is the page you want to start on?
Previous.
It's the one with the globe on top. Yeah, there it is.
Okay, good morning everyone. Just a quick audio visual check. Can you hear me okay? And obviously see the screen okay?
We're good.
Perfect. Again, good morning. I'm Scott Sweeten with PFM Asset Management. We'll go through the market economic update. I'll provide some updates as we move along. And I'm going to touch on every slide here, so I'll just hit the finer points as we move through it. Current market theme is still very relevant today. The invasion of Ukraine by Russia created numerous issues. Certainly it exacerbated inflationary pressure. Commodity prices have soared to at or near historic levels. Certainly energy is one. I don't think a lot of people actually realize the importance of Ukraine from an agricultural standpoint. As far as exporting, they're typically within the top 10 for corn, barley, wheat. Another area that they actually excel in is the semiconductor chip manufacturing. Roughly 70% of the inert gases that are used in the manufacturing of the semiconductor chips originate in Ukraine. So back in further, increase the supply chain bottleneck that we're dealing with in the area. So that's mostly going to affect used cars, new cars, things of that nature. But taking a look at the U.S. economy.
Before you go to the U.S. economy, is there a reason your report doesn't tell us that the energy prices have to do with way more than just the Ukraine and the present administrative policies?
Now, these are basically just the highlights of the bullet points that we wanted to initially touch on.
And I'm just asking, why did the other one not get touched upon?
Why did the other one? You're referring to the issues with energy or
Yeah.
And the reports being closed, production being cut, things of that nature.
That's correct. The energy shortage, pipelines, leases, all the things that are impacting us from being self-sufficient.
Right. I completely agree with you.
So I would, if you're going to give us a full report, we need to have full reports on it. I'm not trying to give you a hard time. It's just very important times in our life right now. So I want to make sure that we have the whole story, not part of it, because people will utilize what you have in many ways. Since you are our experts, and I love you guys being around.
Understood. Thank you for the comment.
So can you amend your report to make that in there?
Well, what I can do, since I have Steve on the phone, we can certainly run it by our portfolio strategy group, and then we'll have to go through compliance, and then we can determine that. Anything to add to that, Steve? I think that's probably
the that's the protocol, right?
And again, on a more positive note, the U.S. economy, just some updates there. The labor market continues to improve. Two of the mandates for the Federal Reserve, full employment, which essentially, for all intents and purposes, we are at 4 year full employment based on the statistics. Inflation continues to be a 4 year high, regardless of what economic indicator we look at. CPI, producer price index, personal consumption expenditure, all at year over year levels that we have not seen for the last 40 years. Even though a little bit on the upside, if you want to be an optimist, the most recent numbers that came in for CPI, PPI, and personal consumption expenditure, even though they're still at elevated levels, they actually have cooled off a bit from the previous month. And I believe the next reading we have for personal consumption expenditure is next week. And that is the main indicator that the Fed monitors for inflationary pressure. I'll give an update on the Federal Reserve. Basically, I think we're all aware they've raised rates 75 basis points to date. Essentially, the next two meetings forecast are 450 basis point rate hikes at both of those meetings. And the Federal Reserve continues to reduce their balance sheet as well. Speak down just a little bit there. Or zoom out. We're cutting off the bottom portion of that. And the part that we're not able to see is the U.S. Treasury yield curve. That's partially inverted. That was for a fairly short trading time period, I believe, at this point. A little bit over a week. Essentially, why is that important? Historically, if the 2 year treasury is yielding more than the 10 year treasury, that has been indicative from a historical standpoint that a recession may be in the 12 to a year and a half future down the road. So, thank you for weighing in on that. I saw Wells Fargo. Strategists yesterday basically were predicting a recession potentially by the fourth quarter of this year. So again, that's all going to be data driven, and we will certainly monitor things as we go ahead. And Steve, if you can go to page 6.
While you're getting ready for page 6, we have a guest who just arrived from the public. Can you announce yourself from such a good record?
Sure. Felipe Barros from that blasting.
Felipe?
Yes.
And how do you spell your last name?
Dubarros, D-E-B-A-R-R-O-S.
Continue. Thank you. We can continue.
Okay. Thank you, sir. This is a great snapshot of just tying in quite good things here. We're looking at inflation continuing to heat up. Focusing on the consumer price index. And essentially, this also gives a bit of an explanation on why many felt and still believe the Federal Reserve is far behind the curve at trying to rein in the inflationary pressure. And I think this is a great snapshot. If we take a look at March of last year, CPI was 2.6%. At that point, the Fed was still very comfortable with inflation being in that range. Take a look at the unemployment rate, 3%, 2-year treasury yield, 16 basis points, and we were projecting 0 rate hikes in 2022. We moved to the June of last year. You can see the PPI almost doubled. It keeps up to a 5.4% number. Unemployment rate slightly dips, and 2-year treasury yield ticks up to 25 basis points. And again, still factoring in 0 rate hikes this year. Then we get to the end of the third quarter. CPI still remains 5.4%, but we start to see those components heat up dramatically. Unemployment rate improved dramatically, dropped out to 4.7%. 2-year treasury yield ticked up to 28 basis points. And still, we are factoring in 0 rate hikes. Then the fourth quarter and the first quarter of this year come about. And within the fourth quarter, quite a few things happened. We also had Omicron originate out of South Africa the day after Thanksgiving. That caused quite a bit of volatility in the market. But essentially what we're looking at the end of the fourth quarter, CPI keeps up dramatically again to 7%. Unemployment rate dips all the way down to 3.9%. Treasury yield jumped that 50 basis points. And I think we're all well aware of the inverse relationships. As yields go up, prices go down on fixed income instruments. And you can start to see here that we're actually pricing in 3 rate hikes for 2022. Now, we get to the end of the first quarter of this year, the unemployment rate got to 3.6%, which basically puts us almost in line with where we were at pre-pandemic. February of 2020, unemployment rate was at 3.5%. You can see the 2-year treasury yield dramatically increases from roughly a 73 basis points where we ended 2021 to 2.34%, and currently that's at a 2.62. So again, significant change there. Unemployment rate at that point was 7.9%. In March, we topped out at 8.5%, and the April reading dipped down slightly to 8.3%. But again, we're still dealing with historically high levels of inflationary pressure. Now, I mean, the main thing to focus on there, you can see at the bottom, the number of rate hikes projected for this year are 7. You know, you've heard anything from 7 to 10. Those are currently priced into the market as we see it today. And we can move to the yield curve. Okay. I'll just provide some updates here. You know, take a look at the lighter blue shaded line. That would be yield curve at the end of 2021. The dark blue line, which would be the end of March 31st. Essentially, that's almost a straight line up as far as the shift in the yield curve. As I stated, the 2-year ended 2021 at 73 basis points. We're currently at a 262. So the dramatic move just within a quarter, essentially. But you can see the inversion here at that time. The 2-year was yielding a 246. Well, the 10-year was at a 234. Now that's actually gone back to the levels that historically we're accustomed to. The 2-year is at a 252, and the 10-year is around a 285. But really, the right side of the screen tells the story. This is all we need to know. In the fixed income space, there was no place to hide in the fourth quarter of last year or the first quarter of this year. Take a look at the bar chart. Just in the first quarter, 1-year treasury, negative 80 basis point return. 1 to 3-year, which would be one of your portfolios, that was down negative 2.34%. And just to put that into perspective, that was the worst performance for that index since 1980. And also taking a look at the 1-5, which would also be relevant to one of your portfolios. The index had a negative return of 3.16%. And the 1-10 year, the further out of the curve we go, the more volatility we have, and had a negative 4.02% return. For all intents and purposes, no matter what asset class you were in within the fixed income space, you were dealing with negative performance across the board. And see, we can just go to the next slide. This will back that up a bit. You can see the ICE Bank of America Merrill Lynch 1-3 year Treasury Index. Again, as I stated, it's the worst performance of that index in over 4 years. And you can trace that all the way back to basically 1980. That's when Chairman Goldberg was in office, and basically providing a bit of a template for Chairman Powell in our current environment. So, just give you an idea there. The next slide would show you the performance of the 1-5 year Treasury Index. Again, worst performance in over 40 years for that index. And Steve, I think you can move to the 17, that's the bar chart for the 1-3 year. And really just trying to provide an overall snapshot for you in terms of the income space. And you can see just in the first quarter, the 1-3 year index, regardless of the sector, you can give off the board negative returns. Treasuries down 2.34%. Agencies down 2.28. Asset-backed securities negative. Corporate data AAA negative, and BBB corporate negative. All within the first quarter. Now, taking a look at things from a bigger picture, longer time frame, looking at 10-year leverage, which you know we prefer to manage everything focused a bit more on long-term goals and objectives. So you can see over the 10-year average, all positive returns across the board. So this is the cycle of the market that we have to navigate. There's always pullbacks in the market. We're still finding value. And we'll point out specific examples as we move along. Aiden, just move to the next page. And we'll just give you, again, an overall snapshot of the 1-5 year index. As you can see, again, no matter where you were at, within the fixed income space, negative returns across the board. And from there, Steve, we can jump to the account summary on page 22, unless you want to add anything additional on the market or economy.
No, I'll follow up later once we get through this.
Okay. I'm going to keep going through this portion, or?
Sure.
Okay. And here we have the account summary at the end of the first quarter. The portfolio. $105,591,034. If you look at the right quadrant, you can see the sector allocation, well diversified across the board. Roughly half of the portfolio is in treasuries. And then the other significant allocation would be federal agencies. And looking at the bottom maturity distribution, you can see the vast majority of the portfolio is in that 3-year and under category. I would actually say that's the sweet spot for us currently, finding value in the market. We're able to go after very attractive corporates. Still also investing in treasuries when possible. We can move to the next page, Steve. And again, just an account summary of the 1-5 year portfolio and the 1-3 year portfolio. We can see the market value as of March 31st. And if we look at the right, I think this is actually much more telling here. We look at yield at market. Essentially, that would be a good indicator as of March 31st if we were to go out into the marketplace and put new capital to work, or even essentially purchase all of the holdings in your portfolio. That's actually the yield that we would be looking at as of March 31st. So again, we're starting to put money to work at much more attractive yields than we became accustomed to in the last few years. And below that, taking a look at the 1 to 3 year portfolio, you can see the yield at March better than 2021. So again, we're kind of driving home the fact that even though we are dealing with negative performance, we are able to reinvest at much higher yields than we have had. That is going to provide cushion in some of these unrealized losses that you're looking at in the portfolio. And as we move along, ideally, some of the issues that you have that are going to be approaching maturity before the end of your fiscal year, those will start to appreciate in price as you approach maturity. And certainly at maturity, you'll get your principal back and you would have received income at the time that you held it. So just focus on the fact that those are unrealized losses at this point. Move to the next slide. Compliance aspect, if you will. This is the sector allocation analytics. The gray portion of the bar is showing the maximum level permitted by your investment policy. The blue shaded region is where you were allocated at the end of the first quarter. And on the far left, these are the sectors that were invested in the fixed income space and also money markets and LTIPs. But just as a quick visual takeaway, we've got a very healthy buffer between where you were allocated at the end of the first quarter and the limits imposed by your investment policy. As the investment manager, that's an ideal position for us to be in. We're able to be very nimble and flexible. And when opportunity does arise in the marketplace, we're able to take care of that and capture value for the portfolio on your behalf. Next slide, please. And this is a great snapshot of the holdings for the portfolio. You can see security types. You can see the market value percentage of the portfolio that comprises. And also ratings from S&P, Moody's, and Fitch. So I think that can give you a great overall bird's eye view of the portfolio. And we can move to slide 2017. Could be a more than 3 year portfolio snapshot. Okay. Thank you. Total market value at the end of the first quarter, $103,127,693. We've added in accrued interest, cash, these are some of the enhancements on the new reporting. Taking a look at the portfolio duration, 1.71 years, that puts us slightly under the benchmark duration of 1.8. Again, yield at cost, which is essentially what the portfolio was yielding as of March 31st, that is 66 basis points. And then yield at market at 221. So again, we are putting money to work in this range or significantly higher at our current date. But portfolio credit quality for the 1 to 3 year is a double A. Again, the upper right quadrant, you can see the sector allocation breakdown, well diversified across the board. The bottom right quadrant is the duration distribution. Blue bar is the portfolio, the gray portion of the bar is the benchmark, and as I stated, we're slightly lower and shorter than the actual bar duration. And bottom left quadrant, which would show credit quality just from S&P, and again, that's double A for the portfolio. And we can move to the next slide, please. Thank you. Typically, so we really have two slides in here that show activity for the quarter. And why is that important? I think it gives you a good idea of how our portfolio managers are navigating the volatile time period that we're going through, but also shows you where we're finding value, where we're rebalancing. You can see from the end of the fourth quarter to the end of first quarter of this year. Slight uptick in treasuries. For the most part, everything else, pretty much across the board, were incremental changes. Here's another slight uptick in the corporate space, which that is an area that we've been very active in. We've been finding quite a bit of value there. And I'm sure you can reference your month-end statements to see some of the attractive corporates that we've been picking up in the portfolio. And we move to slide 31. Essentially, this is just the bar chart in a numerical format. This is essentially show you again activity from the 1 to 3 year portfolio. The blue portion of the bar is purchases. The gray portion is sales and maturities. So you can see we were buying corporates, buying treasuries, asset-backed securities to a certain extent. Then you had maturities and essentially sales on treasuries, asset-backed securities, agencies, and federal agencies. And again, to the right, we're just looking at that data in a numerical format. And page 32. Provided enough of a background to explain this very easily. Again, just taking a look at the quarter, the benchmark was down at -0.34%. It was, hate to convey any negative performance on our end, but we actually did come in at a -2.23, so we still, even though we were in a volatile down market from a fixed income standpoint, we were still able to outperform the benchmark within the first quarter. If we go up over the last 12 months, you can really start to see how the fourth quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year changed the performance dramatically. The benchmark was down a -284. We, on the portfolio, were down a -265, so again, we outperformed the benchmark. And then, looking at things much longer term, over a 3 year period, 5 year period, and over the last 10 years, we've been able to outperform the benchmark by a pretty healthy margin. So, again, I'd just like to point out this is a cycle of the market that we just have to navigate. And the main part is to have a strategy and stay disciplined for both portfolios, which is what we're doing. And continue to find values where we can, and you know, we can give you specific examples on how we're doing that. And if you can just move to slide 35, the accrual basis earnings. So on a positive note, if you just look over the last 10 years, we've been able to add earnings to the portfolio of roughly $10.2 million over the last 10 years. So I think, you know, that's certainly one of the areas that we can add value while we're dealing with upmarket and upmarket, but I think that's something positive to focus on. And from there, Steve, I think we can go to 48. I don't think that's the 1 to 5 year. I was saying 48 actually. If you look at slide 48, that's just going to show you some of the deals that we were able to pick up in March. March 10th was when we purchased the Walmart corporate bonds. You can see the yield of market of the 32. You can see other yields well above 2% in that range, but I can give you some other specifics in May as well. But from there, Steve, we can probably jump to page 75, which will be the one that might be the portfolio.
That gets into the self-insurance piece, am I correct?
You're correct, sir, yes.
Just for the sake of time, you could maybe summarize any major divergence in what's happening between that portfolio and the portfolio we just went through. But when you look at some of the charts, it's pretty close. We could save time if you just summarize two or three important points.
I would say it's still, and Steve can certainly weigh in on this as well, but certainly the duration is longer than the 1 to 3 year. So there is potential for a little bit more volatility within the 1 to 5 year portfolio, but for all intents and purposes, still within that 2 to 3 year time frame, that's one of the sweet spots where we're picking up the most value and finding attractive yields without needing to go further out of the curve. If you look at the activity for the 1 to 5 year portfolio, it still mimics somewhat of what we did in the 1 to 3 year. You had treasury purchases, corporate purchases, and certainly the performance was down a bit more than the 1 to 3 year, just because as we go a little bit further out of the curve, you're certainly going to have more volatility to interest rate fluctuation. Outside of that, I think for the most part, we're managing both portfolios for basic liquidity yield, trying to pick up values as often as possible. And we're talking to our portfolio managers on a daily basis, so that is pretty much in a nutshell what is being relayed to us from that. I think they are being a bit optimistic looking at the latter part of this year. So again, we'll stay focused looking at the data and manage the portfolios for the investment policy and strategy that we have in place.
Excellent. I appreciate the synopsis on that. And as a warning, I'll see if there are any other questions from the committee. But excellent job. Other than my one comment, as usual, great work. Anything from the committee? Being none, we'll move on. I think we're moving on. Hello, hello.
It's frozen.
They call in the future in the PFM, put the names of the people next to the billboards so we capture them, like in this case.
Nicole, I don't have any additional presentations to share on my end.
Very good. Not very good because you always love to hear from me, but very good from a time standpoint. So we're now moving to the financial advisory portion.
Yeah,
switch.
We just added a couple of other slides. And we have a slight change to our agenda. We're adding one additional piece and then we wanted to just
Is that because of my comment or?
No. Yeah, I can email it to you. Does that work? Or do you want to just plug in there? So if we undo that one?
If I undo this one, it disconnects me.
Okay, no worries. Why don't I email this? Can I email this to you to get on there somehow? Oh, you know what? What am I thinking? I'll get on WebEx here.
And then
Sorry. Of course, yeah. That's the best one. Sorry.
No.
I was like, how did we do this last time? Yeah. I was trying to remember.
Yeah, that works.
All right.
Are we ready?
We're getting there. I'm gonna just log in so we can pull it up on the screen. It's record time for AM, just so you know. We usually go a little longer. So, crazy. Yeah, they really pulled a fast one on me, but I'm logging in.
Are you two both from Orlando, Nicole?
I may ask for the chair also. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the phone number that's on there, if they've identified themselves.
I have no idea what that number is.
Is that Dave?
It's a school board number, I believe. Yeah,
well, the 754 looks like
us.
A school board.
Maybe it's the poly?
There's nothing written down. We got it now? We're good.
Good morning.
Good morning. Introduce yourself so she can get the name.
Yep. My name is Mara Lugo from PFM Financial Advisors, and I'm here with my colleague Laura Howe.
And you're located?
I'm located in the Miami office, and Laura is located in the Orlando office.
Great.
So, but I'll probably be moving to Broward with Costa Real Estate. So I'll be your neighbor, I'm sure. Probably only a matter of time.
We're very happy about that. We don't understand why anybody lives in Dade.
Yeah.
Continue.
Sorry, yeah. All right, so here's our agenda, which is just a, you know, we added section four in here, so it'll look a little different from your printout. So for the market update, you see these slides every week, and actually this is the slide you saw at the prior meeting. So these are rates as of April 6th. And the reason I wanted to throw this in is because when you see the next slide, you see how that yellow line really moves up. And that yellow line shows current tax exempt, you know, AAA MMD over the past 10 years is the range in blue. The average is orange, but that yellow line is current. And so I dropped that in so when we go to the next, you can really see how rates have gone up significantly over the past 6 weeks. And then the chart on the right shows AAA MMD. Again, you know, illustrating the same thing, but we're seeing rates just, fortunately for me, you know, I haven't been in this industry environment in my PFM career, so it'll be interesting seeing rates go up this high, but.
It's not as interesting for us who have investments. I
mean, yes.
Interesting's not the word we would utilize.
No, it's probably not the right word for me either. you know, and for issuers either, because it's affecting refundability, it's increasing the cost to borrow debt, and, you know, the Fed raised rates 50 basis points again, so. So yeah, we threw in the last slide just to kind of give you that move, to show that movement, and you can see it here too. So this is the AAA, this is AAA MMD and Treasuries compared to tax exempt and taxable rates over the last 3 years. Right here is the volatility from the onset of COVID. You can see how markets just went crazy, and then sort of normalized a little bit, and then right here you're seeing just that real steep up climb that I just talked about.
And that's just the 10 and 30 year, everything's just like all right on top of each other, taxable and tax exempt. There's not much of a difference right now.
Yeah, and you can see that how, you know, you had, you know, for example, here's a 30 year taxable, and you see the spread, and you see everything condensing and moving upward. So with that, I'm going to go into the general obligation school bonds. As part of the $800 million SMART program, which was the 2014 referendum, we just issued the final tranche of new money bonds that was series 2022. So now the full 800 has been issued. This chart in the middle shows the bid results. We've received 6 bids, so this just happened, I feel like it was yesterday, but it was May 3rd, so 2 weeks ago, where we had the competitive sale. Bank of America was the winning bidder. With a true interest cost of just shy of 4%, and you can see the range there. So the PV difference, if you're curious what that third column is, it's sort of saying, so we take the final amortization schedule, we say the present value of a 1 basis point change, and then we calculate, you know, so the difference in essentially debt service. So, if, you know, Wells Fargo was the winning bidder at that cost, it would have cost, you know, $2.5 million more. So here is actually a summary of the pricing results. We look at this section that we have the circle around to spreads. Spreads range from 8 to 50 basis points on this.
On our ratings, you mentioned
Correct.
That on the prior page.
Yes.
Did our rating drop stay the same?
Stay the same.
That's important for us to note in the minutes that with this thing, the ratings stayed the same.
Yep, the ratings were reaffirmed by Moody's and S&P. AA2 and AA
minus.
So
that's excellent.
Yeah. And so thanks to Ivan for getting, you know, compiling a lot of information for those rating calls. It's not easy. They ask
40 minutes. The committee gives an accolade to Ivan. And no kidding, folks. Ratings are going down in many places. So it's very important that we're able to keep it in these dynamic times or interesting times.
And the thing with ratings too in this market, as we see spreads widen, the ratings become even more important. And so maintaining the, you know, the strong ratings is important. It affects the cost of borrowing, the cost of debt for the district. So and the rating agencies have a lot of questions. You know, Oleg was also on those calls and they asked some tough questions. And so Ivan comes in with the answers and we have those discussions and it results in these ratings. So this is just sort of a snapshot of the details of the pricing analysis and how we look at it. They were all structured with 5% coupons, premium bonds. That's similar to all the issuers we've had for the GO.
Callable after 10 years.
Yes.
And they want to be prepaid or potentially rates go back down and there's opportunity for savings.
So here are the parameters from resolution. So this just is sort of a snapshot of the results, and obviously we did what we were going to say we did, and that's what this slide shows. So the par amount was set because that was all that was left. We issued the full amount. We didn't leave any money on the table. Final maturity, I think it's actually technically 29 years.
So I'll be over 100 years old if we hold these to final maturity. Can we note that in the minutes? Ivan will wheel me in, will tune up my hearing aid, put my Coke bottle glasses on. Okay, continue.
Well, here's the part that you might also find interesting. So this is the millage, estimated millage impact. And so,
what did he say?
Which part? So this shows the aggregate millage impact requirements. So these are the four issuances of the GO bonds, and on the asset sheet, it's millage. So on the top is the sum of all of that. And so, you know, this is the end of the program. So this is the max, you know. Hopefully with refundings, it can only go down from here, but that's what this graph shows. So with that, we'll talk about, we've been very busy with the school district. We had back-to-back weeks of sales, so I'll turn it over to Laura to talk about the COPS.
Yeah. Okay, so we did go into the market with the Series 2022B that we will close next week on the 25th. We did a negotiated sale with Morgan Stanley on May 10th. You can see the chart on the lower right. The existing COPS debt service is in the tan, and then the new is in the blue. So we did do the structure that we had brought to the Finance Committee last time, you know, with a small amount in 34, and then just extending the overall aggregate debt portfolio for the COPS out to 2036 with two bullet maturities. The ratings were affirmed by Moody's at a AA3 stable outlook and Fitch at an A+ stable outlook. On the next slide, you'll see the pricing performance on slide 14. The spreads range from 74 to 80, and so our last issuance spreads were a lot tighter. The ratings didn't change, but the spreads were a lot tighter than they are now. So not only are interest rates rising, but the spreads on credits are what investors are demanding are increasing as well. So this wasn't the smoothest pricing. I think Ivan lost a few more hairs and I got a couple gray hairs that day. And it's interesting, I just got an email from an underwriter this morning with a market update talking about that April's month was the largest, the third largest outflow with $20.7 billion in outflows. The first largest was in March of 2020 when COVID hit. With $45 billion, and then the next largest was $16.9 billion in June of 2013 from tapering. And so this was the third largest in April. So it was a very rough market. Morgan Stanley did have to underwrite quite a few of these bonds at the end of the day to get this deal done. So while these spreads aren't what we're typically used to, it's, you know, very indicative of what this interesting market is that we're in today. You know, it's really hard for investors who are kind of freaked out with everything that's going on and locking up their money. And so you're seeing all of these outflows, and so to enter in and to sell, and I think it's only going to get worse as we're, you know, moving on through the year. So kudos to Ivan to push. push to get both of these deals done and get this out the door. These are the parameters. It was a not to exceed principal amount of $169.5 million. The result was $151.2 million. You know, that was funding all of the projects that we originally had set out to do. Our final maturity, you know, was within that under the 2040 and 2036. And these are callable in 2032, so a 10-year per call on these as well. And our yield was 3.75. And so, while, you know, it was rough, rates are rising, spreads were rising, 3.75% still isn't, you know, a bad result. You know, when we put that all into perspective on what the financing is costing, you know, and if you went and priced today, it would probably be a little bit worse than that. This is just an overview of the debt profile for your costs that are outstanding, how much is outstanding, what the final maturity is, what the next call is, what the refunding status is. So this just is something that we keep track of. We make sure that if anything's, you know, coming up, that we can look at it and see if it makes sense to do any call options. But we have until 2025, so who knows what the market will do in the next 3 years for these refunding. Any questions on the issuance before we hop to this next slide?
This is where it's going to differ for your paper.
So we did add in this in the agenda for the tax anticipation notes, which Ivan had mentioned, and I feel like time is just going to flow. So we'll be gearing this up to bring to the board here shortly to do the next issuance, which is you know, something that the district does every year, the $160 million for cash flow fund needs to make sure before the ad valorem revenues come in November from the property taxes that teacher salaries can continue to get paid before those revenues come in. So this is just showing your historical over the past 5 years. We will not anticipate getting interest rates anywhere near to that 9 basis points that we got last year. but, you know, we'll obviously coordinate with Steve and Scott and see if there's any opportunities as well. And Ivan will handle this for investment opportunities. This is the one issuance that you're allowed to have potentially positive arbitrage on for tax regulations. And so if there's an opportunity to invest the proceeds of the TM sale, that's something that hopefully will offset some of the interest costs on this.
If I could ask Ivan and our advisors if action's going to be taken at any point in time, can we get the paperwork to the committee ahead of time, just so we can be more knowledgeable, if something happens?
Yes.
In other words, let's not wait for a meeting.
So this is the next steps over in the timeline. We'll draft the documents, you know, request a short-term rating from Moody's, go to the board in July, and then do a competitive.
So Ivan, I'll give you a timetable on Monday, Monday morning.
Because with people traveling and everything else, you want to do it, and we have difficulty under our statute and some years to, you know, do just written approvals. So we got to delicately handle
this. This was the similar timing from last year's as well, where we.
But less people were traveling last year.
That is true. Yes. Yeah, no, so that's a great point.
It's going to be much more dynamic. I know I have a busy summer. So.
Yeah.
Any questions on the tax anticipation? Okay. So the equipment leases, we had previously let you all know that there was an additional $225 million authorized under the master equipment lease with Bank of America to fund district needs potentially over the next few years. And so we are going to be moving forward with lease number 25 and 26, each for approximately $16 million for vehicle fleet replacement and technology upgrades. And that's all.
Continue on. Ivan's got the gap.
Any questions?
I'll make a motion supporting attendance.
Any discussion? Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 The leases?
And also for the leases? Do you have motion for the leases?
I'll make a motion for the leases.
So Dan, you second?
Sure.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone?
Aye.
None in favor, say no. So move, pass, both motions.
We'll keep working.
So that one will go to July as well? Does that have to?
The leases?
The board, or is that some automatic thing?
That's this year.
This is what?
The town is next.
The nation is going to.
Yeah, the leases will be done before June 30. The TIM will occur.
In July for next fiscal year.
Correct.
I think that's it. I think the chair's going to table the sunshine lawn refresher to the next meeting. Other matters that may come before the committee?
Question, Ivan. Did we get or have a copy of the reports today?
Yes, so Nicole sent it to you.
Wait, thank you.
Public comments, questions? Anyone from the public have any public comments, questions? I think the next committee meeting is Friday, November 4th, just to let everyone know. Be prepared.
No August meeting?
We need to reschedule. We have.
Reschedule in August.
An anticipated August 26th financial advisory that needs to be rescheduled. So I'll be reaching out to each of you to find your availability to reschedule that one.
So here again, we're going to convene again on August 26th for an RFP evaluation at a level meeting.
The SNCC.
Strip.
Powership.
And then the next regular meeting will be Friday, November 4th, 2022. So, but the August 26th is not something that PFM will be involved with.
Yes, that's our next financial advisory.
Oh, yeah.
Is the 26th.
It's a regular board meeting.
You're talking about RFPs, Ivan?
I thought we were talking about, okay.
No, the next scheduled meeting is for August 26th, but due to some conflicts in scheduling, we need to reschedule. And then we have the anticipated armored car RFP.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
That I'm going to be reaching out towards the end of June. I need to send out some more dates. We were honing in on the 20th, but it's not a go, so I'm going to send out some additional dates, and then we'll confirm that towards the end of June.
Okay, so 26th is going to be rescheduled.
Yes.
So we'll notify every member once it's a little fun.